Well, hey, welcome to Kimby Jude Side Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And today is November 27th.
27th, right, not the 28th. I'm rushing along.
2018.
Yes. Right. The day after the 26th.
Very good. So you can do math.
Can you? That's right. About it. Robert, you're the expert.
Yeah, actually, this is the time of the semester, because as many of you may know, I teach mathematics for a living. That's my real job.
Are you?
All this civics is just a hobby.
I know. Amazing how you devote so much to your hobby.
But this is the time of year when I gave some exams. I graded them.
Are we talking about MIT or Harvard Extension?
Both, actually. I think I give a Harvard exam on Thursday, and then I just gave one to MIT.
Do they give all their exams before Christmas break? Because I know some colleges it's after the Christmas
Harvard
break.
Used to be after
the
break, and then some years ago they changed the whole Harvard schedule, which had this cascade effect because. Mm. They had to move everything up, but then that changed the summer school. So instead of being a 7-week program, being a 6-week program. Oh. And then for those of us who had in the summer, you used to teach 5 hours a week for 7 weeks. Then we had to teach 6 hours a week for 6 weeks. So it changed everything. So
now we're there.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, it's that time of year.
So
when,
you're busy correcting exams.
I do a fair amount of that. But it's also the time when classes are kind of like very organic in the sense that, you know, you start off with these ingredients at the beginning of a semester and you don't really know who you got. You know, sometimes you get a pretty good indication on day one, but sometimes you don't. And then there comes a point where you start to, it's sort of like, you know, it's like going out for dinner with your family or friends. You know, you go to your classroom and then you have a running conversation. You have gags that you've been playing off of for weeks and weeks and weeks. So it's actually kind of the fun time of the semester when you're sort of in sync with
it's just getting to know the group that you're in.
Yeah, you know, but it's also the time when students who've been struggling are really struggling, and the students who had the capacity to really excel are just taken off. Mm. So it's actually, you know, from a teacher's point of view, it's actually pretty exciting to be in the midst of
that. If you can deal with both ends.
Yeah, and that's not always so easy.
No, I mean, I think of public school teachers, and that is hard to deal with the kids that are struggling and the kids that want more and more and more because they're beyond.
And I actually started out as a, hey, we are running off on wild tangents. It's what I do lately a lot.
Yeah, right. But we'll cut it off soon.
Very, very soon. No, I started off, when I first came to Boston, I actually put little signs around town saying tutoring in math, physics, and chemistry.
Oh.
And I, you know, earned a few
physics.
Bucks.
You're a physics person?
I can do physics, sure.
Whoa.
Right. So anyway, I had to pay my very expensive rent then.
Yeah, which was $100 a month.
$70 a month.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
From my
We're
little
showing
teeny,
our age.
My teeny little room.
It was rent controlled.
It was rent controlled, but actually the rent in that building wasn't particularly controlled compared to a lot of other buildings at the time. But so I've just raised some chump change tutoring for people, you know. And then, you know, after a little while, next thing you know, I find myself in a classroom. Next thing you know, I find myself in front of big lecture halls and whatever. But, you know, you start out just like tutoring people one-on-one, right?
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I feel more comfortable doing that. Sometimes I actually feel more comfortable in front of a big lecture hall, you know, putting on a show. It's like theater, stand-up.
Well, you do have to, it is.
No, actually, when they train teaching assistants or people who are going to be teaching in classroom teachers, after, you know, once upon a time, they sort of, you know, taught them all this pedagogical, this, that, and the other.
They should bring in comedians.
They brought in theater coaches.
Or improv people.
Yeah,
for improv.
And honestly, that's probably the best thing you can do if you want to become a good teacher.
Yeah.
You know, just like do improv, right?
Yeah. Well, so. No, I most of the improv classes are all MIT neuro people.
Yeah.
I mean, or you're even teaching them because a lot of comedians, it's that other side.
It's not a bad place to start,
Yep.
So, anyway, back to the civic world.
Okay,
civic and political world.
Slow doings. I had a lot of meetings this week, but slow doings because of Thanksgiving holiday. So
I think...
Very short meeting last night. I was watching. I said, wait a minute. Over already?
It's over.
Two policies?
70 minutes.
I know. Yeah. I do want to ask you about one thing. Did you watch... Were you there?
I was there, yeah.
I couldn't see you in the audience.
I was hiding.
Ah, because I do watch it
really
at home. What was the charter write-in about application for, was it a curb cut? I knew it was about trees, but five-year-old, what was that
there
about?
There was an application for a curb cut for a place, I think, on Whittier Street.
Exactly, and I guess Quentin Zondervan went to go look at it.
Right, but you know, this is one of those funny things. So this is a situation where somebody's, you know, just wants to either put in or move a curb cut, whatever.
But a tree's in the way,
but
right?
There, well, there had been a tree in the way, so the tree was taken down. Now, was the tree taken down very recently or
apparently
unclear.
A while ago, no?
Maybe so.
But it's a city tree, though. Bordered on private property?
I think
that
well,
was the
I
issue?
Think Councilor or Vice Mayor Devereaux pointed
yes.
out that there was a tree that was in front of the house that was would have been city tree, but
yeah.
there's also one that was in the background, in the backyard or side yard
okay.
that didn't seem no longer to be there. And now listen, this is all well and good. If
yeah.
moving a curb or installing a curb cut means taking down a city tree, I think there's a valid argument you can make whether you should say that's good or bad.
Right.
But
well, they do need some kind of permit for a city tree, right?
Right. But this struck me as sort of almost like a little opportunistic to sort of say, well, we're really interested in the canopy, so let's use this person's application for a curb cut to sort of bring
of
up
why
the larger
we need this
issue
new
about
ordinance about trees on private property.
Right, about regulating
yeah.
private whether
yeah.
you can or cannot remove
yeah, it
trees
confusing.
On private property.
Yeah.
By the way, just to run off on another wild tangent, right? This morning when I was forced to go up on my flat roof in Cambridge to clear a plugged up roof drain, plugged up by leaves of a tree. I tell you, if I had a chainsaw this morning, boy, I would have taken every tree down.
Because how do you clean those gutters?
Well, these aren't gutters. Mine's a flat roof.
Oh,
so what
so
happens
it's just up on the roof?
Leaves gather, sticks and twigs from trees gather and whatever. And yeah, it's a maintenance thing. You got to pick it up. But you know, sometimes you don't really know you have a problem until the next thing you know, water's raining down in through some of these living rooms.
Oh, wow.
And you know, so anyway, we all, we love our trees, don't we? But the thing is, you know, there are some potential issues here too. And homeowners have to kind of maintain their property. You know, I have to take some branches off now because they're overhanging my roof.
Right.
But, you know, anyway, tread gently into the realm of private property.
Isn't there? I think there is a meeting on the first meeting of the
in January.
No. There's some. Isn't it this week? Urban.
Maybe there's
that,
something about the
preliminary thing.
The scan that they did of the city.
Yes.
But I think they're also maybe in the beginning of the new year they're already sort of talking about possible language for implementing some kind of restrictions on.
But
what
is
you
it
can
through this
trees.
Urban tree task force though? Isn't it now delegated
to
them?
I hope so, because that's kind of the right.
That's
way
what you should look. Just Google that. I think there are some meetings coming up, but you could look at the city website for that.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was one item on our very short agenda.
Well, yeah, that was the only almost. Well,
I mean,
not
it was
contentious, but there was.
It was wonderfully short. There were two items on the city manager's agenda,
and then
three city councilors. That's it.
Yeah, right.
And one of them was just a procedural one, like, please videotape the following meeting.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of the orders on the city manager agenda was for an additional sum of money, $3 million.
Is this for the Bigelow?
Yeah. So the thing is, a couple of years ago, I can't remember exactly when, the city did a friendly eminent domain taking of the old Chamber of Commerce building.
Which they were willing to give to the city or sell to the city. Yes.
I
seem to remember $831,000.
Yeah, I hope I'm not screwing up the addresses here a little bit because
it's eight something.
Because there's actually several buildings in play here as part of the master plan.
Wait, but I thought just the Chamber of Commerce building we're talking about.
I think this is the Chamber of Commerce building. But the thing is,
$831,000, I think.
But it's like one of those three-way trades in baseball.
Oh.
Okay, so right now there's I think there's kind of a you know, subsidized housing thing right just onto Bigelow Street, sort of right across from City Hall. But there's also the Lombardi building, which is where the License Commission, Historical Commission is right at the
was
corner.
Was that going away?
No. And then there was the Chamber building, which was a couple
that's
streets up.
That's the only one I'm aware
at
of,
the corner of Clinton Street.
I didn't know about the one on Bigelow.
And then there's City Hall,
Yeah.
So there are four players here. So the city,
of renovation.
Yeah, so they want to do some renovations. They want to possibly move some of the
functions
technology might move out of City Hall
into this 831.
Into someplace else.
Yeah.
Now, why would they be doing that? Well, maybe because it would work better. And it's also very energy intensive. I never actually thought of it, but that's what they said last night. And also, there's this never-ending quest for more space for city councilors. For their aides, for their puppies, for their dogs.
Do they have a desk?
Oh, they would probably need private meeting rooms for their
No, but right now, what do they have? When they go to City Hall, do they have a designated desk or do they share space?
They have like designated desks, but they're mostly in their own office, but it's a shared office.
Well, it's like the new office, infrastructure now, yeah. open
right.
Whatever.
In addition, city councils have a contract use of the workspace or
work bar. That's true.
Over at, sometimes that's
stuff.
Where they do their mm-hmm. meetings. Yeah, but I'm sure they want to have it all in-house and whatever, right?
What about at home?
I gotta say,
a lot of this stuff's done by email.
I'm not trying to put this as a blanket endorsement or anything, but I do remember a time when all the city councilors were in the city council office, right?
Yeah.
Which is still there, but there ain't no city councilors in it anymore.
Wait, isn't it the city clerk and all those people?
No, that's down on the first floor.
Well, what is in there?
But the staff people who staff the city council, and I don't mean the aides, right?
So what do you mean?
It was, Sandy Albano was the person who was in charge, but she's retired now. But
I thought that's the clerk.
Mary Horgan. No, they're on the first floor. But so the thing is that the councilors used to be in there, and very few councilors would be there on typical hours, working hours.
Yeah. Because they hold their office hours at places around the city, which is good.
And most of the city councilors had day jobs. So,
some still do.
Right. So the thing is, why have a dedicated office space?
That's a good point.
When in fact you're at work, right?
It must be a part-time job.
Ideally, it should
be. But let's not even go there.
All right. Okay. So the thing is, they want more space. So the more that they want space, the more you're pushing people out. The IT people have to get moved out.
What about the mayor's office? Is that expanded? Because there's like 5 or 6 staff over the last two mayors. Like, where do they all sit? Because that is
they
a
actually,
full-time
that's,
job.
That's
isn't
pretty
it?
Palatial. They've got
is it?
They've
yeah.
got multiple rooms in there.
Okay.
But it used to connect to the Ackerman room once upon a time.
Oh.
Actually, if you opened up a There's actually
a
secret closet you could open up.
I didn't know
and
that.
Yeah. Huh. Back when it was called the Walnut Room.
I mean, the Ackerman Room is not used all the time. Why can't they sit in there?
Good, and they do.
Okay.
Right. But anyway, it's a multi-part, multi-player plan here because in addition to the City Hall, there's the Lombardi Building where Historical Commission is, for example, they're busting out at the seams.
The Historical Commission is in the Lombardi Building?
Yeah, up on the second floor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But it's a relatively short building.
Yes.
Now the question is, could you go up a little on that building?
True.
The answer is, sure you could.
Yeah, why not?
Right?
Yeah.
So maybe the master plan will recommend going up a little
bit
on
sense.
That. And then you can house some city functions in that. Meanwhile, these subsidized housing they have over on Bigelow, they're moving that into the old chamber building. So that won't be city offices.
Okay.
But this way, the building on Bigelow would then be available for city offices. We'd be right across the street from City Hall. So, as I say, it really is kind of a four-player deal here.
Okay, so...
But it ain't cheap.
No, it isn't. Well, so the $3 million is just to do some improvements, not to do...
Right.
I'm thinking of the next agenda.
Small
item.
Stuff for City Hall, but not much. That'll be a bigger one.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the eminent domain taking of the Bigelow Street building...
Which one is
not
that?
Not Bigelow, excuse me, the one at Clinton... 831 Mass Ave.
Yeah, but where's
that
the three
money.
Bigelow Streets? That's on the side.
The
they took over. That was given to
the
them?
It's the very first residential
That wasn't
building.
Eminent domain?
No. The city has had it for...
Oh, they own... Okay, I didn't know
whether
that.
Whether it's King Housing Authority or whoever operates it, but that's available.
That's not the one... What's the street where Life Alive is? That's
Inman.
Inman. Never mind. Okay.
Yeah, it's Inman, Bigelow,
Okay,
Lee.
Right. All right. The second agenda item was also $3 million, but Dennis Carlone.
That was for
up,
firehouses. Which
I know.
I was really glad to see it.
Right, but he brought up a really interesting point, which I remember because he said, because it says design and reconstruction. He said, isn't it going to cost more than $3 million?
It's going to cost a lot
more. Like $25 million.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm glad that point was made because that is a little misleading.
Right. So the thing is, I didn't realize how old and unattended most of the fire stations in the city really are.
Denise Simmons gave credit to Councilor Mallon for
it was really been
all
on the case.
Yeah.
She's totally hot to trot for this.
Yes.
So I think
hot
the,
to trot.
The
that's
most
a bad analogy.
Whatever, right? She's on the case.
She's
all right.
No metaphor.
But the thing is that I think the most recent fire station built was like at least 25 years old or maybe longer.
Which is the newest one?
And then
we have
the next newest one is something like 85 years old or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, they need a lot of upgrades, and I think everybody kind of knows it, but it's been one of those cans that have been just kicked down the road.
And
the
issue also of East Cambridge, because they used to have a small one, and that's now a hotel, and what is serving
Kendall Square?
Kendall Square.
Yeah, the old Kendall Square fire station is now the Kendall.
Right, it's a hotel. So so now it's serviced by, I guess, the one right down here on Lafayette and also Inman Square. And there's a third one that it's serviced by.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably some optimal plan where you can put fire stations. But even if you temporarily take one out of service, there's enough coverage that you can kind of double up and
well, that was brought up. They said if you're doing some rehab of one, what happens to this? Do they operate while you're doing the rehab or do they... And I think, am I getting that right? No, I think they said it would just be taken over.
Yeah, the other ones would do it. Yeah, I mean, some are more taxing than others. I think the main fire station of it, where Broadway meets Cambridge Street,
is that the main? Is that the main one?
Yeah, that's headquarters.
Oh.
Yeah, it's also
the one
where
it's in the middle of everything.
Yeah, that's also, I believe, unless things have changed, where the emergency communications were all housed upstairs in that building.
Oh.
I don't know if it still is, but that's how it was.
Huh.
So there's a lot of important functions there. So if you do a major rehab of that building, you have to relocate a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not a small matter.
No.
But, you know, the city's been, you know, I mean, I often would credit Bob Healy for being the person who started the city down the road toward rehabbing city properties that had been long neglected.
Yeah.
Right? So whether it was, you know, new police station or new library or new water treatment facility or capping the... you know, the Payson Park Reservoir.
Well, how long was he in office there?
Like 32, 33 years.
So I would imagine a lot of these things would come under his...
Right, but the thing is that a lot of these cans were kicked down the road.
Before him?
Yeah, I think Bob kind of actually made it his business to not only take them on, but I don't think he was particularly eager to leave being city manager until he knew that many of these projects that he'd kind of initiated were going to get done.
Okay.
And and Richie Rossi, you know, because they were like the tag team. Richie also, he would be sort of like the clerk of the works. He would kind of ride herd on a lot of the projects as well. So they kind of worked together. I mean, Bob was not a people person who sort of would interact with the public on things.
Like a Bob Bill Belichick.
Right. Richie was great for that, you know.
Yeah.
So the two of them, whether it's Bob initiating things, making sure the finances work, and Richie carrying things through and dealing with the more public relations part of things. That was a really great team, you know. And it's kind of nice to see with Louis DePasquale in there that the tradition
is around for a long
preserved.
Time too, so he knows a lot of these projects.
Yeah. And he comes from a finance point of view, and honestly, the best people to really be thinking these things through long term planning wise
are people that
are
know
people
the
who
budget,
work in
money.
Financing.
What does it cost? Right.
Yeah. So anyway, so those are some of the main things that were going down at the meeting. One thing that I, you know, was something I found a little bit curious was...
The urban agriculture.
Yeah, on urban agriculture, urban
farming. And
that
was brought up. It's like, why is this... I mean, people grow vegetables
without
any kind of guidance, you know?
Yeah.
Other than beekeeping and pigs,
right,
I guess.
Right. So the thing is that... So there was an initiative on urban agriculture some years ago. I'm trying to remember who were the sort of the main... sparks to make that happen. I think Councilor Chung was sort of big on
wasn't
it.
Wasn't it? Not Matt.
I can't say hot to trot on it anymore.
Yeah, no. That was just to deal with fire. Fire, not just a female. No.
I don't know.
Whatever.
It's not my judgment.
Go ahead.
But the thing is that so that there was some initiative to make some of those things happen.
Was it spurred by the beekeeping thing, or was
it
before
that?
I think
it was.
Or pigs?
There were particular people who.
Yeah.
Lobbied and said, well, you know, we really want to be able to keep bees, we want to do this. So, some
chickens,
councilors,
that's true. Right?
Yeah, so some councilors sort of took it on. And it got farmed out, pardon the phrase. But hey, you think my puns are bad, you should have listened to Vice Mayor Deborah last night.
Oh, yeah, apparently she was
good.
But really
she was good,
it.
Actually.
Yeah.
And, you know, she says, why is this dying on the vine?
Yeah,
you know?
Right, yeah.
But, but anyway, it did get literally farmed out to the Community Development Department to. Put things together. And I think Ellen Kakinda was the person who was
and everyone gave her
the
praises.
Staff person. But then
she left
off to Seattle. And, you know, and Jan also brought up something last night. Well, whatever happened to the outdoor lighting proposal?
Oh,
that was a big task force for that as well.
She had another metaphor for that. I forget what
right,
it was.
You know?
Yeah.
So for
lights
that
out,
one.
Lights out on that one.
Lights out on that one. right? And, you know, people are saying, like, is this because community development is overworked? Is this some sort of negligence?
I think all of the above.
Is this because there was some ticklish zoning issues and complexity? You know, part of it, I'm going to suggest, is that the person who was riding herd, well, there's another one, right? The person who was, this is, we're going to bring back urban cattle farming, right? Cambridge Common, you know, I'm going to have a few head of steer out there.
Yeah. All right, right? So who was heading that?
All right, so that was Ellen Kinder, right?
And she left, and it sort of gets the ball dropped maybe a little.
But Chris Basler was the person who was riding herd on the outdoor lighting, and he moved to Delaware.
There you go.
And, you know, sometimes it's as simple as the fact that the person who was the main person, the point person, moved
who was,
or left the job.
Yeah, and who was very involved in it.
And
maybe
no,
the work's passed on, but not with the
same
urgency.
But maybe maybe the way they passed the football
in
community development needs a little work.
Okay.
I think that's probably a speculation.
But wasn't the lighting thing really at the ordinance stage, or did it have to go back for tweaking
lighting,
and that's where it stayed?
This began as what they call the Teague petition, one of several Teague petitions.
Oh, right, Charles.
You know, about who wanted to change the zoning to address outdoor lighting. And I thought
tricky.
That was kind of also, I think it was sort of wrong-handed.
Which I think other people thought that too.
Yeah, the planning board did and agreed. So they made a task force, the intention being to create a municipal ordinance, which is different than the zoning ordinance, basically to regulate all outdoor lighting. So wouldn't, see, if you did it by zoning, the only lighting that would be affected would be new construction. So any existing lighting would be grandfathered in.
Right.
So the idea, if you did it with a municipal lighting, it would basically just be an ordinance. Mm-hmm. Now, there'd be a phase-in period, maybe, you know, 3 to 5 years or something. Mm. But then eventually everybody have to get on board. And, you know, also, honestly, regulating lighting, I mean, seriously, what does this have to do with density, with zoning? You know?
Yeah. No, there's a separate issue.
Yeah, actually.
Well, it's like the surveillance stuff, too.
Since I'm the king of wild tangents, I'll just say, you know, on C-Click Fix, Commonwealth Connects, somebody was really getting all worked up about the fact that there were a couple of little, very, very small signs, like a neon-type signs that were in a few places that said ATM machine here or something, right? But it was very small, but it, you know, it was intermittent, right? And I thought, yeah, what's the problem?
Wait, was it on the machine?
No, it was in the window.
Okay.
Now, technically, the Cambridge zoning ordinance has a regulation of outdoor light of sign ordinance that basically prohibits a lot of things that in this day and age. I mean, it dates back 20 some years.
It seems like it has to be updated.
I think maybe it does need some updating.
Yeah.
So, for example, can anybody really seriously make a case that having a very modest
ATM
little thing that was that flashed, that's a real
especially
serious problem?
Especially if you're looking for an ATM. It's helpful, isn't
and
it?
And I could have this wrong, but you know, you may remember the Harvard Square kiosk used to have like this rolling news scroll across
people
the top.
People didn't like that?
I don't know if they did or didn't like it, but I could be misreading the ordinance, so sue me if I did.
Well,
but
we won't sue you.
But the thing is the way my first reading and looked at that wouldn't be legal today. So I'm thinking the thing, you know, now normally when people are doing zoning ordinance these days because they want to up zone or they want to down zone or they want to regulate this or tell you can't cut down a tree or whatever. But, you know, maybe we need to start a little movement toward zoning tweaks. Like a little zoning petition says, could we just change this so it's okay to have a neon sign? Or is it okay?
If it does come under the Robinson zoning.
Or, for example, my own personal choice would be to allow certain zones like Central Square to have an allowance for a little bit more gaudy lighting. Because I think it would kind of be a pretty good match for the place. You know, and
as
rather
long
than
as it's not psychedelic and flashing all the time.
Psychedelic.
No.
Right. No, I mean, we're not talking about something like wildly distracting or like, you know, airplanes are going to call in and saying, wait, I think we tried to land. It turned out it was Central
Square. You
think
some people don't like the Christmas lights out there? Or, no, they're not, to me, they're
winter
lights.
Actually, there is an exemption
lights.
For those lights, for holiday lights,
so
holiday
they actually
lighting,
had to get an exemption.
Temporary.
Yeah.
You know, no, it's an exemption. It's written into the law.
Oh, okay.
So you can put them up. You don't have to get a special permit or anything.
Good.
But only because they're not meant to be permanent, right? Anyway, I just think there are a lot of little things. If you were to do a complete read of the Cambridge zoning ordinance, you'd find a lot of clauses that may have made sense 25 years ago, or maybe not. Or maybe they were the result of a particular kind of hard-ass lobbying group back then who maybe, you know, wouldn't be listened to today, right? And maybe it's time we just did a few quick reads. And
without it going to through the big process.
To still go through the process. But the thing is that, you know, not everything needs to be some tearing asunder.
Maybe they could just get them all together and then you just say, okay, is this, blah, 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 you know, just go through it like that and then go to the proper places to change it.
Yeah,
it just seems crazy.
All right, we got 2 more minutes, so we want to do our announcement
here. You want to do this now?
So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, Judy,
Astral Weeks, which those of you who are of a certain age might know, was one of, I think, the first album of Van Morrison when he was 22 years old. And they are having a, this is a photo of, this was actually the album cover, but the Cambridge Arts Council and the Cambridge Library are sponsoring first at noon on this Saturday at Green and Bay Streets, where Mr. Morrison actually lived with his girlfriend, then wife, for a year in 1968. Very pivotal year. And there is a book based on this called Astral Weeks. I actually have it out by Ryan Walsh, who I think is local. And there's musicians who are local who are going to be there at 12 to, there's going to be some, it's the 50th anniversary of his masterpiece, which I agree with. And it's going to be organized, let me see. There's going to be some commemoration from the city. But then at 3 o'clock, which I knew about, then there's a panel discussion at the Cambridge Public Library with all of these people.
So that sounds pretty good.
It's
so
a two-part celebration, Saturday, 12 noon, at Green and Bay Streets, where he lived for a year and came. I didn't even know that. And I was here in college. I'm giving my age away in 1968. And I don't think I discovered that album until a little later when I actually lived in California for a while. And it is magical. And apparently it wasn't successful when it first came out.
Here's a good idea for Cambridge Historical Commission or somebody else.
Oh.
Let's put together sort of a list of addresses and locations where a lot of other characters have
Didn't they do a music bike thing before?
Well, yeah, do it as a bike ride. All right. You know, so a document.
All right.
Anyway, we'll be back in a few minutes.
Yes.